Welcome to Dancin' Moon Songcast. I'm Scott Simpson, casting from Dancin' Moon Studio in Spearfish Canyon on the north end of the Black Hills of South Dakota, right on the banks of the Spearfish Creek. If you'd like to follow along, you can download a free PDF of my lyric book from scottsimpsonmusic.com/lyrics. And of course, you can find links to all my music there as well. So let's get casting and find out what song we're going to talk about this time. Well, this will be the second episode in our series on the songs that are on the new album, Ozzy's Guitar 20 Years Later. On each of these, we're listening to the original from 2000's Ozzy's Guitar, talking about that a little bit, and then taking a listen to the brand new version, the reimagined version from 2020's Ozzy's Guitar 20 Years Later. This episode is dealing with the song called Man on the Mountain. This actually is the only one of the 12 songs that we actually already did an episode early on last year, about this time. I think it was episode number 5 we did an episode on Man on the Mountain from 2000's Ozzy's Guitar. So what we're going to do is listen to that original version of Man on the Mountain and replay a bit of that discussion before we go into the new version and a little bit of conversation about what went into 2020's version of Man on the Mountain. So we'll give that a listen. This is 2000's Man on the Mountain from Ozzy's Guitar.
On the mountain,
the air is thin
enough to get us close to heaven. As a man in hell can ever be. Life on the mountain is not so romantic as they say. Whether you're banished or you choose to go away, if your only companions are the ghosts of yesterday. Way up there mountain.
On the mountain,
air as thin as it can be. He wants to get as close to heaven. As a man in hell can ever be. As a man in hell could ever be.
Well, in 2000, we had just moved out into the country, kind of up on a mountain. I had just gotten my Roland digital recorder and some brand new equipment, and I was going to get real serious about recording and producing albums. And so this was a big piece of that very first album, Ozzy's Guitar, which kind of had almost a grandfather theme. I grew up with lots and lots of stories about grandfathers and fathers and great grandfathers and lots of stuff like that. And, you know, as a young father myself in 2000, I was trying to figure out exactly what that meant for me. And this particular story was about my great grandfather Lee, who lived in a little log cabin that had been built earlier by I believe his father or grandfather in northern Arkansas in the Ozarks. And Lee, as the story went, was married to Rose, and their first child was my grandfather, Loy Stockburger, who was still alive at the time when I was writing this. Actually lived to be nearly 102 years old. And so, you know, I remembered as a child going to visit Lee. His wife, Rose, was not around. She had passed away at a very young age. But I'd go up and visit him and was just mesmerized by this old man living by himself in this log cabin up on top of a mountain. He had a big old well out in the yard. That's where he got all of his water, didn't have plumbing. He had one phone. It was a old crank phone on the wall, and it only went down into town to like one house so that if he had some kind of an emergency, he could pick that thing up and crank it and let somebody know. He had a little dresser in the corner that had a drawer in it, and he kept candy corn there. And I remember him giving me candy corn. I remember looking down into the well. But at some point I asked why he lived all by himself. And my mom, who was the historian of the family, told me the story. When Lee and Rose had my grandfather, a few years later, when she was pregnant with what would have been my grandfather's younger brother, she did have the baby, But she became very ill with tuberculosis, and they tried to cure that. They even moved briefly to Colorado because the doctors had said that the higher altitude would be good there in Colorado. But eventually they came back, and the story as I heard it, she came back and my grandfather remembers her being kind of quarantined off. They couldn't even go in to see her, but at some point, my grandfather's younger brother passed away, and then Lee had to let Rose know that, and that was kind of like the last nail in her coffin. She never did recover and eventually passed away. And so my grandfather was raised by his father, Lee, and some uncles that lived up there near the family cabin. And so that was the story, which was a sad story about a man that I really identified with. I'm at my core, I'm an introvert. I thrive on time on my own by myself, but I have a deep love for the people that I truly love: my wife, my kids, my children, my parents, some of my close friends. I don't have a huge, wide, broad circle of social friends, but those that I'm close to, I'm really close to. But I do thrive like all introverts on that quiet time. So I had, even at that time as a young father back in 2000, I had romanticized, you know, kind of living that hermit's life, not really by myself, but just me and my wife and my family, just alone up on the top of a mountain, and kind of romanticized that. This story opened that romantic idea up for me, though, a little bit. And thinking about the sadness of that, my mother's mother always said of Grandpa Lee, when people would ask, "Why doesn't he move down into town? Why doesn't he get around people?" And she would say, "Well, he just, I think, wants to be up there close to Rose." So that's kind of what sparked the main hook line in the song and the idea behind the song. So we'll take a look at that. Man on the mountain, he doesn't come down but once a week. The man on the mountain, he'll buy his supplies and never speak. Man on the mountain, he's too lost to find, too blinded to seek. Thinking about that chosen hermitage, coming out of a sadness, but at the same time a desire to be close to the one you love, someone who is gone now, who you can't really be close to, but you do what you can to be close. Too lost to find, there wasn't anyone who was able to really talk. Lots of people tried to talk sense into him and say, you know, you need to move down into town. You need to come down off the mountain. But he was a little too lost to find and too blinded to seek. He wasn't seeking that out. And he was blind. And what was he blinded by? He was blinded by his love and his loss of the wife, the young wife he loved, and the second child that they had. And then the story, of course, starts. I had to adjust, you know. It's always a challenge as a songwriter to take a real story with lots of actual details and then to work that into a song that works. And so you have to be a little open with some of the details. But the storytelling is the thing. Getting the story across as a vehicle for the ideas. She died in the winter, when their baby boy was barely weaned. He couldn't even touch her. She and the child were quarantined. And then when he lost them, he knew that he'd never see the spring. So the adjustments I had to make, of course, in the story were not the details of the separate passing away, but just that he lost both of them, and the details of how that happened. But then connecting it then with the seasons, and I don't really know what season it was when she passed away or when my grandfather's little brother died. I guess I could find that out. But for the story's sake, them dying in the winter seemed to work. It gave me the opportunity to say he knew he'd never see the spring. Of course, the spring always comes, but for someone who's lost the most precious people in his life, spring never, maybe in some ways, never does really come. And then the chorus, way up there on the mountain, the air is thin as it can be, but he wants to get as close to heaven as a man in hell could ever be. So that's kind of my hook line based on the saying that my grandmother always had, that he was up there to be close to Rose, bringing in that heaven and hell. He did seem like a man who was always miserable, but a man who in one way, because of his loss, was in hell, was certainly challenged, I know, daily by the losses that he'd experienced. So the next verse, you have to dig deep there to find enough water just to drink. You have to climb higher to find enough space just to think. But memory is painful, and it only leads him to the brink. You know, when you go to a place of isolation, it's that much more difficult to get the things you need, to get the sustenance. Because we derive, even introverts, we derive sustenance from community, from the people we love. My great-grandfather lost the people he loved most, but he still had lots of people who loved him, who were alive. And we came to visit him, and we would see him, and we would enjoy being with him, but he chose to be in a place where, in many ways, he was cut off from some of that sustenance, some of that community. And I know he was there with his memories, and I don't know. It only leads him to the brink. I don't know. I guess there's a hint there that like many people who have experienced great loss, wondering if life's really worth going on. Of course, my great grandfather did go on. He lived a rich, long life, well into his late 80s, not ever having hardly ever been to the doctor. So he lived a long, long life. But I know that there were times, I'm certain there were times when he wondered if it was worth going on. So we have the chorus again, way up there on the mountain, the air is thin as it can be, but he wants to be as close to heaven as a man in hell could ever be. The final verse, life on the mountain, it's not so romantic as they say, whether you're banished or you choose to go away, if your only companions are the ghosts of yesterday. And so that's the realization of the song, that as a young father, I was romanticizing the life on the mountain, and I still do. I mean, I live out in Spearfish Canyon. I love it. I do romanticize it, but at the same time, recognizing that isolation, as romantic an idea as that seems, there's a price you pay. There's a price you pay for being an introvert. There's certainly a price you pay for being an introvert and forcing yourself to engage with a large number of people. It wears you out. But there's also a price in being separate. And I think being aware of that and staying on top of that and saying, hey, am I getting out? Am I opening myself up enough to other people? The song ends with the chorus again. Way up there on the mountain, the air as thin as it can be, but he wants to be as close to heaven as a man in hell could ever be. So a very simple song. The finger picking, and I don't know exactly what to call that, but this is the first song that I really started to work out that that finger picking style that I use all the time now. That kind of syncopated three finger and thumb kind of rhythmic thing, which I use a whole lot now. Of course, there is the haunting and beautiful harmonies sung by my wife. Just absolutely lovely there. And that haunting female voice coming through in the background was something I really wanted for this. It made me think about his relationship with Rose and perhaps the fact that there on the mountain, he still heard her voice sometimes, and he didn't want to leave and go somewhere where he no longer heard Rose's voice. And so those melodies that Cheryl, my wife, provided for the song were great. Just by the way, the instrumental verse, that solo I did on a little Martin backpacking guitar that I had. It's got a real thin sound, but it's a lovely sound. And the fact that it's the guitar that I bought so that I could take it out on the trail up into the mountains with me, that seemed to be the right instrument to use for that solo. So that concludes our original discussion of Man on the Mountain, the writing of the song, the ideas, the story behind the song, and kind of a little bit about what went into that original version from 2000's Ozzy's Guitar. Up next, we're going to listen to the new version, Man on the Mountain, from 2020's Ozzy's Guitar 20 years later, and we'll talk a little bit about what it went into some of the changes that you'll hear in the newer version. So this is Man on the Mountain from 2020, Ozzy's Guitar, 20 years later.
Have to dig deep there to find enough
of space just to think. The memory is painful. It only leads him to break.
Man on the Mountain from 2020's Ozzy's Guitar 20 Years Later. The new version, you know, as I've mentioned in other episodes, on this album, one of the things I wanted to do was intentionally reimagine each song. I didn't want to fall into the same old ruts. And so on a lot of songs, as I started work on them, I made some conscious choices that were that put me in a place of doing the song differently. One on this song in particular, most noticeable probably is the change of the main instrument. In the 2000 version, we were sticking with the six-string guitar, and in this we have a tenor banjo taking center stage, and so I worked out essentially the same chord progression, but utilizing the tenor banjo, and also noticeably putting a bit of a swing, picking up the tempo just a little bit, and putting a bit of a swing into the rhythm. With the banjo, which for me, I guess the way I play a banjo tends to add that swing anyway. Whereas the 2000 version was kind of played in a pretty straightforward rhythm, and so that changes the feel for sure of the song, and it risked. And this is one thing that I wrestled with throughout the the mixing and the work on the new version. It's fundamentally, a sad song. A song about loss, a song about becoming a bit of a hermit, coming out of that loss in order to deal with that loss in response to that loss. And yet the music in the in this new version sort of belies that. Now you can that can be a real problem. On the other hand, it can also be something that really opens up the potential of realizing, you know, the contrast there, that you're kind of moving along and kind of toe tapping a little bit until you realize the what's being said, that there's this contrast here. I'm getting this story about this man who lost his wife and lost his youngest child, and there's some irony in that combination or in that juxtaposition of the upbeat music and the very sad story. So one of the things that also you notice, especially at the intro, at the beginning, and then at the end, is that kind of ambient used my old Roland keyboard for some of that the ambient sound at the beginning, setting the chord and really, what I wanted to go for was something that felt like that banjo was coming in from a distance, coming into us out of some mist. The mist being, you know, certainly the idea of being on the mountain early in the morning, mist rising up as the sun rises, but also the mist of time. You know, looking back. The haziness of the past, and coming up out of that, into the present. And as I mentioned in the earlier discussion of the first song, one of the things that I loved about that first version and still love is, the haunting, female vocal, harmonies by my wife. Well, my wife sang the harmonies in this one as well. And what you'll notice, we did work on the harmonies a little bit, extended them in some places, three-part harmony as opposed to just a two-part harmony, I think, in the original version. But the other thing that I did, as I was thinking about the banjo, the singular banjo coming up out of the mist and out of the distance there at the beginning of the song, I also thought, you know, how about doing the same thing with the female voice, the haunting female voice singing up on the mountain. And so what I actually did, rather than have Cheryl go back and sing some new stuff, which we could have done that, I pulled a piece out of her, a couple of parts out of the earlier or the later part in the song, her harmonies, and pulled them up to the front and put them in more at a distance and coming once again, like the banjo coming up out of the distance and the mist to begin the song, and so that kind of gets at there's something. It's certainly we move into an upbeat song, but there's some foreshadowing in that intro that this is not just a sunny, happy song. You're made aware of that, I think, from the start, from that distance and that ambient, not really a minor chord, but ambient and distant and misty, I guess is the word that works for me. The other big change, I think I mentioned in the first version that we used that, I used the little Martin backpacking guitar. I pulled out the mandolin, for the instrumental section on this one. And really the instrumental section is a wholly and completely different, kind of counter melody, than the original. So so we've got really entirely different instrumentation on this version, and that's really one of the major changes. But for me, it holds true to that original vision of, you know, a story, a sad story of a man who becomes a hermit, and the idea that can seem very very romantic, very romanticized, and yet there's this dark edge to it, this deep sadness of loss, of not being able to let go of the loss in the past, in order possibly to grab and grasp, the new possibility of love. My great grandfather certainly had plenty of love in his life. He had family. He had uncles. He had us. He had his one child who did live, my grandfather, and the family that came from my grandfather, my mom, her sisters, their kids. But he didn't ever have that one other person that he lost when he lost Rose. And so, a sad story, I think a warning story about how we deal with loss, especially the loss of that singular person that most of us have, that we love above and beyond all the rest of the planet, that person we've chosen to spend the rest of our lives with. So there we have it. Man on the Mountain from 2000's Ozzy's Guitar, and the reimagined version from 2020's Ozzy's Guitar 20 years later. Appreciate you spending this time with us here on Dancing Moon Songcast. You can find all of my music, including the new album, and all of my lyrics at scottsimpsonmusic.com. Stream on Spotify, on Apple Music, on iHeartRadio, Amazon, wherever else you like to stream your music. You can do a little search for Scott Simpson and find me. There are a couple of other Scott Simpson musicians out there, but sort through. I've got about 28 albums, so usually one of mine comes up in there somewhere. So thank you again for joining me here in Spearfish Canyon for Dancing Moon Songcast. It's a pleasure to do this, and it's really enjoyable to talk about this new album project that has been kind of a culmination of the last 20 years of my work in the studio and songwriting. It's really a joy to look back on these songs. We've got about 10 more to look at, so stick with us. Be well.